Hello everyone, this is Julia McCutcheon, founder and creative director of the International Association of Conscious and Creative Writers at IACCW.com. And a very warm welcome to our monthly event for free and full members of the IACCW. And a special welcome also to our new members this month. We're delighted that you've joined our community of conscious writers. So thank you all for making the time to join us for this session. Our topic today is how to connect with your creative wise woman as a conscious writer. And I'll be introducing my special guest, Rebecca Campbell, in just a moment. First of all, for the benefit of our new members, I'll just explain how these calls are organized. So all members have the opportunity each month to email questions to us on the topic that we are discussing. And all you need to do is send your questions to info@iaccw.com. And as long as we receive them at least 24 hours in advance of the interview, we'll always do our best to include them. Each interview lasts about 60 minutes, and the audio recordings are posted to the members-only area at iaccw.com. And once you've logged in, you'll find these on the past events page. Okay, so let's move straight on to today's interview with our special guest speaker, Rebecca Campbell. Let me introduce Rebecca to you. She is a best-selling author, spiritual teacher, grounded spiritual mentor, and soulful guide. Rebecca has guided thousands of women to listen to the callings of their soul and create a life that is completely aligned to them. Her first book, Light is the New Black, will be followed by her second, Rise, Sister, Rise, in October. Rebecca has received multiple awards and draws on her unique experience as an award-winning advertising creative director to help people tap into their creativity, lead from a place that is authentic, and light up the world in a way that only they can. And you can see all about Rebecca and what she's doing on her website, which is at rebeccacampbell.me. So, Rebecca, a very warm welcome to the IACCW, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, Julia, I'm so happy to be here. I'm excited about the conversation we're going to have.
Fantastic. So we're going to dive straight in, and the first question is one that we ask all of our speakers, and it is to ask you to share your story of your own relationship to writing and your story of becoming a published author. And I know that you started your career as a copywriter in advertising, but obviously you've come a very long way since then. So tell us more.
Yeah, absolutely. I think when I was younger, when I'd spend time in nature, I'd always hear whispers. You might call them, you know, those knowings, those ideas that just come to you and you just have to write them down. And so I was always connected to that. And then I ended up deciding to go into advertising because I saw how many messages were bombarded at people constantly. And I thought it would be an amazing training ground for creativity and working with directors and writing and all of that. But after about 10 years in the industry, year by year, month by month, it became very evident that that career just no longer fit my soul, and there was more that was rising in me, and like many of us, when we have those moments of, oh gosh, I need to change my life to fit who I really am, it was really difficult. And for me, what helped me make the leap into, I guess, a whole new career was using the writing as the baseline. I realized that I'd been training with amazing copywriters, creative directors for just over a decade, and so when I quit my job, I remember telling people that I could have said I'm leaving to be an intuitive or a spiritual coach, but I ended up just saying I'm giving myself 6 months to write my first book, and I left it at that. And that was what I call, that was like my escape route, my elevator pitch. And the reason I focus solely on writing to start with is honestly because I had no idea what to call myself. I had no idea what to call what I knew I wanted to do. And so I let writing be the cornerstone. And ever since making that leap, I committed to just writing every day. I think so many of us who are writers, you know, we can, and particularly if we're not published yet or, you know, we're not getting paid for our writing, it's really easy to look at being a writer and not feel like you're a wannabe writer. And so I remember reading a book which really struck me. It's called The War of Art. Do you know Stephen Pressfield? Have you heard of him?
I do. Yes, indeed. I know that.
Oh, love him. And he's actually a copywriter trained as well. I started reading books, and it was really in that moment where he was like, if you're a writer, all you need to do is show up every day and write. That is it. And so that's what I did. And for me, I just showed up. I receive my writing in most potency when I'm in nature. And so I committed to a daily practice of walking in nature and writing a page a day, which ended up being a chapter a day. I didn't realize it at the time. But little by little, day by day, my writing just grew and grew and grew. And, you know, what started as like an Instagram post turned into a blog post, which turned into my instant guidance oracle on my website, and then that turned into a book proposal to Hay House, and then that turned into my first book, Light is the New Black. And so the book, my first book and my writing now, it's almost like it's just paragraphs put together as chapters and then books. And so that's really been my journey, just capturing the whispers when they come and showing up with discipline.
Well, that's a great story, and I totally resonate with what you said about nature being a great source of inspiration. Mm. It's one of my greatest sources of inspiration too, and I love that you brought that in straight away. And I'd just really like to ask you a little bit about the shift that you have obviously undergone in relation to the training that you received as a copywriter, which is quite a different skill, really, to turning that into book writing and blog writing and connecting with your audience in a different way. Did you find that a natural progression for you, or did you have to really pay attention to adjusting your style and adjusting the energy and the focus of your writing from that copywriting training into the different style required for those other mediums?
That's such a great question. I feel like, to me, it was like I had a bit of a double life, and this was echoed in my writing. So, yeah, I the great training about copywriting is that you are trained in any style whatsoever, and it's about condensing it down. You also learn how to master a good headline, and I tend to receive whatever type of writing I'm doing, I'll receive the headline first. And so I really think that my copywriting training so taught me that. Also, as a copywriter and a creative, you get taught about how to come up with a big idea, which is like similar to a headline, but it's like kind of even bigger than that. And that just made the writing process so much easier for me. However, when it came to really crafting and curating and receiving my own style of writing, that just took practice, and it wasn't practice in necessarily crafting the words as much as it was trusting the voice, my soul's voice, that wanted to be expressed. And having a background, I find a lot of people who are trained in media or some kind of communication like that, where we learn what the process is, the structure, sometimes we need to do a little bit of untraining.
Yes.
So for me, that was certainly the case, because particularly when it came to, okay, who's my audience, who's my target, and who am I writing to, I actually had to stop coming from that from my head, and rather I created a process, actually, which I call Your Life is Your Message, where I did it myself, and now I take my students through it. And what you do is you just get a timeline. So you get an A4 piece of paper and a line from left to right. And on the left is the day you were born. And on the right, far right, is today. And then you just plot out the different points along the way, the significant moments that pop out in your life. So it may be when your mother died, or it could be your first day of school. It could be when you fill off the swing set. Like, it could be big things and small things. And you just plot them out. And then you go back and excavate your life. And at each of those little points, those moments, like falling off the swing or, you know, the loss of someone you love, you ask yourself, what is it that I needed to hear in that moment? And so what I ended up doing in my writing was actually writing to myself, because for me, in order to, what was happening at the same time of me transitioning careers and transitioning writing styles was that I was stepping out of the spiritual closet, because I was living a bit of a double life, and letting the larger world see who I really was. And it didn't feel right for me to come from that place of, like, I am an expert and here is what you need to know. And so rather, I just wrote to myself. And so my whole first book was really an encouragement for me to write, an encouragement for me to share my voice, an encouragement for me to align my life. And I love that, because one of the most common things I get from my readers of that book is, oh my gosh, it's like you were writing it to me. And I think it's because I was. And what I've discovered, what feels true for me, is that actually when it comes to who our reader is and really striking a chord with our audience, I believe that our tribe, our audience, our target market, our niche, are actually just different versions of us. And so if we can just write what we need to hear in that moment, particularly if you're doing spiritual teaching kind of work, or you know, writing which is about touching the heart, then it's going to touch their heart if you're writing it from that place. So yeah, that's really one of the cornerstones in how I write. I write to different versions of myself.
Excellent. Well, that timeline that you've just described is a very powerful process, and it's great that you've shared that, and it can be used in so many different ways, can't it? I think when people are writing their memoirs, it's a useful way to go back over significant moments. Mm. What you've just been saying about crafting what you needed to hear in that moment can then share something of real value for your readers as well. So that's great. Thank you. So staying with the writing and your experience of it just for a moment, do you have any kind of ritual that you use when you sit down to write, or anything that triggers the writing process for you? Because you mentioned earlier about walking in nature and writing a page a day, but I just wondered if you had anything in particular that you use to get you into the writing mode.
Yeah, definitely. I've got two different things. One is a form of meditation called light sourcing, which there's a free version on my website if anyone wants one. But it's essentially, this is how I wrote my first book. I went into Regent's Park, the rose garden there, and I sit down on a park bench and I do this form of meditation called light sourcing, which is essentially just opening yourself up to receive. You're just breathing and receiving, and that's it. And then I'd write a chapter, and then I'd walk to another park bench and I'd do the same thing. But when I'm writing like a blog, or if I'm even something like if I'm writing a prayer or a poem or whatever it is, the main thing that I do is I say this prayer, which is from A Course in Miracles. It's called the Miracle Workers Prayer. And I can say it now, but I've kind of edited it so it's not just, because the way it's written in Course of Miracles is very masculine. So I've edited it a bit, but it goes like this. It's, I'm here to be truly helpful. I'm here to represent that which sent me. I do not have to think about what to say or do, because that which sent me will direct me. I'm happy just to be here, knowing that all grace is within me. I will be healed as I let the healing happen through me. And I say that before I write, because that just puts me into complete surrender mode. It also takes my ego out of the picture, which, you know, the part of us, which, you know, is like, oh, God, the writing's not good enough, or, oh, where's, like, you know, the writing's not coming today. Just puts me into that place of service. So I'm just showing up, and whatever wants to flow through me creatively can, and if it doesn't, it's not my fault.
Great. That's lovely. Well, thank you for sharing that prayer. It's beautiful. And I think that surrendering the ego and the personality, or the everyday self, I tend to call it with conscious writing, is a really important part of getting beyond all of those anxieties and fears and all of the limitations that are around those anxieties and fears, and setting us free to be the vehicle for the writing and the creativity to be expressed through us. So we're going to talk a little bit more about that in a moment. I wondered if you wanted to say anything more about what kind of degree of emphasis or importance you place on spiritual practice in relation to creativity and writing, because you are obviously somebody who's very interested in spirituality, and I wondered if you had any comments to make on that.
Well, for me personally, it's everything. So my creativity is my spirituality, and so I see creativity as receiving ideas, words, phrases, books, movies, creations that are wanting to be birthed by someone in the world. And in order for us to receive them and be the best vessel for it, we need to be a clear vessel. And the way to be a clear vessel, I believe, is through meditation, being in nature, and just thinking yourself with that mysterious force that controls the spinning of the planets, the coming of the tides, the blooming of flowers, the dropping of the leaves and the seasons, all of that. I feel like you don't have to do spiritual practice in order to be creative, but I think it definitely helps in the potency.
I couldn't agree more, absolutely. Okay, so in your new book, Rise, Sister, Rise, you write about the seasons of creativity, and I'd love to ask you to share a little bit about that area.
This is something that's really influenced me, particularly recently, because coming from advertising where, it's just deadline after deadline after deadline, it's like, if you think seasonally, it's like that's the season of summer constantly. And as a creative person, if we are constantly in that summer phase of like pushing it out into the world, creating, showing everyone, and not respecting the rhythm that needs to be there, we can't create a life work. We can only create that one season, and we end up burning ourselves out. And what I've discovered is how important it is to recognize what season you're in with your creation, and to honor it and respect it. So, for example, it starts with spring, where all the ideas come up, and when you're in spring, it's like, oh my gosh, I could do this and this, and oh yeah, it's all about this. And at this phase, this is when it's most important to actually protect your ideas and not just go out to the world and tell people who will be like, yeah, I don't really get it. And then that idea kind of crash and burn. And so this is a phase where it's like, it's linked to the maiden archetype, the virgin, where it's just like, oh my gosh, you're excited, you're optimistic, you can see, dream up the potential of it. And it's like, you've got so many post-it notes on the walls, you've got your Google Docs full of ideas. That's the spring part. From spring to summer, summer is when, maybe in the end of spring you present the idea to your writing coach or your publisher, your editor, and then you go into summer, which is like making the stuff happen. It's like the rubber meets the road. It's like, okay, I'm locking down and I'm writing this thing. And you spend, this is linked to the mother, which is all about the real birth process. And during this phase, there might be all the contractions that come with it, and it's the highs and the lows. And then after that, you go into autumn, which is linked to the wild woman. And autumn, if you think about it seasonally, is all about letting go and releasing. So if you're thinking about the writing process, it's probably, say you're writing a book, it's when you hand it over to, say, an editor, and then they start honing it and cutting it away and being like, more this and less that. And when you're in this space, you've got more clarity because you can see where you're going. You're not in it so much. And then next comes winter, where it's really about retreating. And I find this phase sometimes can be difficult because it's like, okay, I'm actually, maybe it's being birthed into the world and it's time for me to let go of it. And while it kind of feels like my baby because it's like being with me, you kind of let it go and be like, okay, well, I did create this, but it came through me and maybe it's not mine anymore. Maybe I'm offering it to the world. And I think in this phase, it's so important that we do. This is when you book the holiday, you take the time off, because if you don't give yourself that replenishment to refill up your well and to really rest, then, and if you rush into spring too soon, you know, it's not going to be as fertile and bountiful. So, yeah, I'm learning to really respect the seasons of my creations and then also respect the season that I'm in, because I think it's really easy to just race from one to the other to the other. But I think when we do that, certainly in my case, it's like you can lose the potency of what's wanting to come through you.
Yeah, beautiful. Well, that's lovely that you've expressed it like that. And it's very similar to how I teach the creative cycle as well, which also works with the seasons. Interestingly, I actually see it starting in winter because it's the emptiness of space and that stillness really out of which those first sparks come. But other than that, very similar, and it's lovely to kind of hear it phrased in a slightly different way.
That's so
cool.
I so agree, though. I think because the thing about the cycles and the seasons is that they run into each other, right?
Sure.
And you can't have spring without that emptiness of winter. So that's beautiful.
Okay, so I'd love to ask you to say something about the creative wise woman that's actually in the title of our talk today. And perhaps you could just share with us, I don't know, what shape and form that takes for you. What does that mean for you, the creative wise woman, and connecting with our creative wise woman? Tell us a little bit more about that.
So the creative wise woman to me is the ancient part of us. And again, it's like it's the feminine, really, rather than having to be a woman. And so it's within every man as well, but it's the ancient self. It's the part of us that just knows, the part of us that remembers, the part of us which is like whispering constantly and yearning for us to hear it and listen to it and spend some time with it. I believe that it's the archetype of the wise woman that whispers to us when we are in nature, whether it's through looking at a flower, the wind blowing, or walking past like a really old tree. It's the part of us that's beckoning us to surrender to it and release that voice.
Lovely. And would you say that the creative muse then is different to the creative wise woman? What would you say about that?
Oh, that's interesting. I when you just said that, I just imagined the two dancing together.
Yeah.
And so I've never thought of what you've just said, but I think that's a beautiful visual, and I'm seeing it's almost like the wise woman is calling upon the muse, which is, I believe it's like the consciousness that's wanting to be birthed and is like calling it in, and then the consciousness is kind of like calling on her as well to wake up and carry it.
Beautiful. Thank you. So we're talking a lot about creativity here, which obviously is inspiring all of us. And I wonder if you have any comments to share about whether or not you feel that this is an energy that runs in everybody, that everyone has this creative energy, and then that's going to lead us into how we actually tap into it. So tell us a little bit more about that.
So I believe that everyone is creative. I think some people are born more openly creative and have had their creativity nurtured as well. I believe creativity is really similar to intuition in that respect. in that everyone is intuitive, but not many people actually trust and follow it. And, you know, they may hear the whispers, and they may hear the ideas, they may hear the words, but it's very rare for someone to actually allow those whispers and those words and those ideas to move them, and then trust that they are the writer or the creator who have been chosen to express that in the world. I think creativity a lot of the time is down to confidence and trust. I think trust even more than confidence, actually, and patience, and just as much as that is dedication. Like, I believe that creativity is really putting two things together that don't really belong. And so that takes extreme trust and faith. Yeah, maybe it's more faith than trust even. It's like, you know, before I think of creation, which is like its time has come, it's because the creator or the writer has received it and gathered the courage to show it and birth it into the world. And a lot of the time, at the time, it doesn't make sense.
Yes, that's very true. And we have to learn to embrace that uncertainty, embrace the not knowing, embrace the chaos when it doesn't make sense, and as you say, have the courage to stay with it and to see it through, because if we fall away at that point, and I think a lot of people do fall away at that point, you know, that they can't see how it's all going to come together and think therefore that it won't come together and then walk away, and that's the big tragedy, really, because we have to really embrace that chaos as part, it's a part of that process, isn't it? And we stay with it. And then with the trusting and the showing up, like you were saying right at the very beginning, and staying present to it, you know, gradually the shape and form arises. And if we stay with it long enough, we find it.
I love how you say that. It's like eventually the shape and form emerges. It's so true. It's like, you know, I'm passionate about, you know, and I'm sure you do this all the time on these calls, but writers and creatives just being honest about, like, how difficult the process actually is as well, you know? Like, Rise, Sister, Rise, this book, actually the words came so easily, but the writing of, like, creating this book, birthing this book has been so difficult. Because, and the whispers, it was like, oh, there you are. Oh, this is strong. Okay, that came really easily. But then it's like, how do I bring all of this together? This isn't what my proposal was. Oh, my God. You know? And even for this particular book, but Light as a New Black came, it was a lot more effortless. I think it was just to give me confidence to actually stick with being an author. But this one, particularly when you're working with, like, feminine energy, oh, my gosh, it was not linear at all. It was chaos. I remember my editor, who is, I know you know Amy Kyberg. She's your editor too, right?
Yeah.
Amy Kyberg, yeah. I had to invite Amy over to my house, because I couldn't possibly send my manuscript over. It was a week before it was due, and I just had probably about 400 pieces of paper just all over the floor. I'm like, we need some structure here. I have no idea how to do it. You know? And so this is why we need the midwives to help us, because it's birthing something into the world that didn't previously exist before is huge. It's huge. And so, you know, if there's anyone out there who's doubting it because they doubt themselves, welcome to the club. It's like, I think it's part of being a writer.
Yeah, it is. And sometimes we do need that external input from an editor to help us find our way forwards. And it's great that you've shared that. Thank you, because I'm sure that there'll be many people listening who feel reassured that that actually, even a week before your deadline of submission, you can still be not 100% clear about how it's all going to come together, and yet it does come together in the end. So I'm sure that's very
reassuring. Oh, I just got chills when you said that. It's so true. It does. And that's just, it's down to the faith, isn't it? Okay. I've said yes to this project. Use me as a vehicle. It's not my responsibility, but I will show up and I need to trust that it's going to work out.
Yeah, definitely. And I see it very much as an alchemical process, actually, too. It's like when we hit that burn of the challenge of not seeing how it all comes together. It's like that, the courage and the trust and the fortitude, really, to stay with it and to allow that alchemical process to release whatever it is we need to release that's blocking us from seeing the pattern. And then the pattern can emerge in us. And congratulations for getting there in the end.
Oh, thank you, thank you. And how have you found it? Because with you having been on both sides of this process.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a very big leap from the sitting on the publisher's side of the desk to the author's side, that is for sure. I mean, it's a very long time ago for me now, so it kind of feels like several lifetimes ago, not just one even. So much has shifted and moved on and changed for me. But I do still remember it well. And I think the reality is that publishers who haven't ever written themselves actually really have no idea what authors genuinely go through to get their books completed and delivered on time. And it's all too easy to sit on the publisher's side of the desk and look at the deadline and not realize just the amount of love and passion and commitment that goes into meeting that deadline from us as authors. So, you know, hopefully this part of the conversation will, as I say, be very reassuring to everyone who's listening in relation to the reality of tapping into this creative energy that we all have within us, allowing it to pour through us and staying with it through to completion and not bailing out when it gets tough.
It's so true. And I think also do you know Robert Holden?
Yes, of course, yeah.
So he's a Hay House author. So I'm friends with Holly, his wife.
Yeah.
We were on holidays and my husband was there as well. And basically Holly and my husband like bonded over being the midwives for the books.
Yeah.
And how like they wrote the book as much as we did, you know. And I think this is it's important to kind of realize that you need your support team when you're committing to a big project.
It's very, very true, and I wholeheartedly agree with you. And just to give a different perspective, I have to say that my writing process is incredibly solitary, and I go into that very solitary space. And then it's only after that I kind of bring in external input, if you like. But we digress slightly. So I'm going to bring us back onto the creative wise woman that we've just talked about and you so beautifully described as the ancient part of us that knows, that's whispering to us constantly. And what I'd love to move us on to next is how we learn to listen to those whispers, how we connect with that creative, wise woman. Tell us what you feel is really important for us to know about connecting with our creative, wise woman.
Well, I feel like the creative, wise woman is within us. I imagine her being like in the depths of our heart. It's like she's really our soul, the ancient self. And so I believe that the way that you connect with her is to spend time with her. Literally, that sounds like really basic, but it's true. It's like through the meditation, through also, I find particularly with the wise wild woman, it can be through dance. I know I use that a lot through the writing of Rise, Sister Rise. It's like, you know, using your body to kind of call in her energies and allow her to move you. And then after she moves you physically, then often the whispers can come even more so.
Yeah, very good. I love the movement component too. Again, this echoes so much the whole conscious writing process, which is very much about alignment and alignment of all aspects of ourselves, obviously the body, the emotions, the mind and the soul, and the movement of the body, whether it be through yoga and or dance and or any kind of form. But I certainly love the dance and include that on our conscious writing retreats, because you need to inhabit the body. And I think writers have a tendency often to just sit in the old penthouse suite of the mind and forget the importance of the body.
So,
great that you
it's so true, particularly when you kind of like when there's like a you can kind of sense that there's something in something, you can't quite write about it, but you're not sure. It's like, you know, like go and walk with that feeling of whatever that chapter is going to be. Let it kind of like take you around the park, or let it literally move you. Or, yeah, I think that's a really powerful thing, particularly like in this recent book, there was a lot of work on, you know, all the witches and healers from the Middle Ages and all the women who've risen and fallen over time. And so I think with the wise woman archetype as well, it's like you can call upon the ancestors, you can call upon the other wise women who have come before, depending on whatever your writing topic is.
Yeah, beautiful. And just to reiterate, of course, that this is the feminine in both men and women. We're not just talking about women here. This is the wise woman in us all, and these whispers of our soul. And perhaps we should just say a little bit more, Rebecca, about how we learn to really listen, trust, and pay attention to those whispers. Because, as you mentioned earlier, many people hear what we call intuition often, those intuitive whispers, but are not trained, are not guided, and are not supported, and don't have the confidence, perhaps, to really listen and to trust and follow them. So is there anything that you would like to add to what we said about learning to really trust those whispers that come through, and also to differentiate those whispers that come from your creative wise woman from any of the other voices that may be going on in your head about different things, whether or not you're doing so well or not so well, and that kind of thing?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll call it intuition because that's easier at this point. So yeah. The thing about intuition, I say, is that you should follow and trust your intuition, especially when it doesn't make sense. I feel that intuition most of the time, and the whispers most of the time, doesn't make sense. Our logical mind couldn't possibly have come up with that outcome or that solution or that headline, and for that reason, most people don't actually follow it. So we were talking before about movement, like dance. A great way to untrain yourself from kind of dismissing your intuition is to carve out some time to actually spend time with it. So I do an exercise called intuitive walking, where I'll go to the park, like a massive park, put my stopwatch on for like 15 minutes, and just let myself be led by that inner compass, that intuitive force, and just let it guide me, let it guide my body. Another way, if you want to really open your intuition up and even get out of like a rigid pattern, is to just do the opposite of what you would normally do. So if you normally turn right when you walk out the house, turn left. If you normally wear black, wear red. And just mix it up, and so you're kind of like really getting yourself out of that rigid pattern. That would be two of the tools I'd recommend. Another one is to keep a log of when you receive your intuitive hits. So it might be like, oh, I knew I was going to see that person this day, or I received this idea and then it was confirmed through something I was watching on TV. So often we receive intuitive guidance and we receive the whispers, but we don't notice that we do when we do. And it's not until 6 months later that we're like, oh my God, I knew that would happen. And so keep a log of it so that your rational mind can be proven wrong in a way. So I call it like the intuitive evidence book.
Excellent. That's great. And also people experience intuition differently, because we're talking about whispers, aren't we? And it just comes to me to say that it may not be that you actually hear something, because it could be that you just have a feeling, or it may be that intuition shows up for you in a different kind of way, that you actually look out of the window and you see a vehicle going past and it has a message on the side and it suddenly reflects something back to you. You're kind of learning to read the signs of the world and something just sparks in you. You just get a feeling and it can show up in lots of different ways, can't it?
Absolutely, that's such a good point. So there's many different types of intuition, but the main ones are clairvoyance, which is clear seeing. Clear seeing is like you don't have to, most people think that clairvoyance is you have to see, like, I don't know, Jesus appear in front of you as a real person. It's not that, or it can be that, but clairvoyance can also be like if everyone on the call just imagines a purple cherry in their mind's eye, and then you change that cherry to yellow, and then you change that cherry to black. That's clairvoyance. It's like seeing without really seeing. Then there's clairaudience, which is clear hearing, which is the whispers. Again, it doesn't have to be like this big, like, holy shout bellowing at you. It could just be just like, you know, you just kind of like hear it in your inner voice. Then there's clairsentience, which is clear feeling. This is like the empathic part of us. It's the part of us where a lot of people who are clairsentient and empathic, they'll probably feel it in their solar plexus, or they'll get chills, or it'll just be, they'll feel excited, they'll feel anxious, they'll feel it in their body. And then there's claircognizance, which is clear knowing. And I think this is the hardest one to differentiate, because it's like, it's that knowing, like, you know, if someone's about to call, or so you run into someone in the street, and you just think of them. And so this is the one that I find it most difficult to differentiate from your mind thoughts and your intuitive thoughts. And so if you are claircognizant, the intuitive evidence book is like your best friend because this will help you differentiate between the two. And also a great tool for getting clarity on what is an intuitive hit and what is your mind and what is true and what's not so true, is to voice it out loud. So I find doing this, like, even with headlines or book titles, saying it out loud and seeing how it feels in your body and how you feel when you actually voice it, you'll know 100% yes, and you'll know what's a definite no.
Yeah, very good. Thank you for sharing those. I think the little phrase that you said there about seeing how it feels in your body when you say something out loud, I think is a really strong clue, because there is an intelligence in the body that goes way beyond the everyday mind. And when we learn to tap into that intelligence in the body and see how it feels in our bodies and inhabit our bodies fully, and this is what we were saying earlier about the dancing and the walking and really connecting with our bodies as creative souls, then it becomes much easier, and the more we trust it, the clearer it becomes. So that's great. Thank you very much. So what about bringing writing into this now? So we've talked a lot about creativity and tapping into this ancient creative part of us. How would you suggest that we use writing to tap into this wisdom? Because, of course, that's another way to tap into the wisdom, as well as to be the vehicle for that wisdom to manifest in the world.
Well, I'm sure you teach this, but yeah, I'd say intuitive writing is such a powerful tool. I will sit down and just, like, at the top of the page say, my soul is calling me to, and then just fill in, say, you know, three to ten pages, and just allow the whispers to, or the feelings or the knowing to flow through the pen. So that's probably my number one way to do it. Another way is I used to use this a lot in advertising, where, you know, because I think it's, when it comes to writing and ideas, I find easier the tighter the brief that you have. So rather than sitting down and being like, I'm going to write a book, you go, okay, well, this is the chapter I'm going to write on. And it's so much easier if someone just tells you what you're writing on, and then, you know, the containment actually allows the freedom to come. And so I do a form, I call it like the box method, where I'll get like 5 to 10 pieces of paper with about 10 boxes on them. Like, I'll just draw little rectangles. and I'll put my stopwatch on and I'll put it on for, say, like sometimes 5 minutes, sometimes 20 minutes, depending on however long I've got. And I'll basically just fill in each box with different ideas or different headlines or different thoughts or different lines for a poem or a prayer. And I will, because I think when it comes to writing, it's so easy for the critic to come in and be like, no, that first word's terrible, don't write that. Whereas when I do the box method, it's like the challenge is to write the worst thing I possibly could so that I pave the way or clear the way for the goal to come through. So I might, and because I think with creativity as well, and when we're weaving words together, particularly if we're writing poetically, it's like sometimes it's putting two things together that don't actually belong, where it's like the alchemy comes in that. And so by filling in all the boxes, what I find happens is that box number 3 might actually match beautifully with box number 40. But had I not written 40 different things, I would never have gotten to that point. So I find that's a really good process for particularly for starting the project, but then also if I'm feeling really blocked and like I'm not really inspired. And I think also with the inspired bit, like I love that word, you know, inspired in spirit. And so if the inspiration doesn't come, what I will do is just try and remind myself that I need to be in my spirit in order to receive. And so I'll do whatever I can to embody my spirit.
Beautiful. Thank you. That's a great tip. So are there any other writing tips, or what would you say your top writing tip would be for people to try? I mean, the box method is a great one, and you know, I tend to use mind maps, which is also a really useful one. But what would your top writing tip?
I feel my top one is going to be quite boring, but I think it really works. It comes down to the discipline of just if you are committing yourself to being a writer, like you don't need anyone. You don't need to be published to be a writer. You don't need to get a degree to be a writer. You don't need someone to give you a business card to be a writer. If you're being called to write, you should just show up and write every day. You're the person who gets to decide whether you're a writer or not. And I believe the only difference between an amateur writer and a professional one is that the professional one shows up to work every day. And, you know, it, like if that's your full-time job, that's great. So you show up for the whole day. And if it's not and you've got your day job and you're an aspiring writer, become a proper writer just by showing up for 20 minutes every day on your lunch break or in the morning. Like I wrote some of my best stuff while I was still working in advertising, and I just carved a short amount of time, 20 minutes, and I said, okay, well, every day I'm going to commit to writing something and putting it out into the world. And I recognized that the only way for us to find our voice is to speak it, and that everything that we write, our tone of voice and our soul's voice, I believe, is getting polished and becoming more and more authentic. So I just recommend to keep showing up and just keep putting your writing out there in some capacity.
Lovely. And I really like what you were saying about that you're the person who gets to decide if you're a writer or not. And the point that I wanted to just add on to the end of that is just elaborating on the fact that it's not to do with external validation, as in being published or having somebody else tell you that you're a writer. It's you who decides. So I think that's a really important point that you've made there, that we need to find the internal validation, the internal alignment, I would describe it as, actually, to resonate with that creative writing energy within us. And as you so rightly say, show up and write every day, and not wait for someone to give us permission to do that, because they tell us we can or can't write.
Absolutely.
Great. Okay, so just finally on writing, because you've shared a lot of practical tools and techniques and ideas and tips with us already, but are there any specific writing exercises that you think would be especially useful for people to tap into their creative wise woman? Anything that we've not yet discussed, or do you feel that we've covered all the main points?
Yeah, well, there's a particular journey that, and when I say that, I mean it's like a meditation journey, which I do, where it's like there's four different archetypes, and again, this is based on, I'm just going to say woman, but we have all these archetypes within us because it's the rising feminine. And so there's the maiden, the mother, the wild woman, and then the wise woman. And, you know, just tapping into those different parts of us and asking them what they want to tell us. I find that can really open things up. So you'd be like, I mean, the maiden is the another way of saying that is like the inner child. Like, what does she have to say? And then the mother, the adult, what does she have to say? She's the one who's a bit more responsible, the one who is confident. What does she have to say? And then the wild part of you, the one who is fierce and potent and powerful. What does she have to say, and how would she write that poem? How would she write that prayer? How would she write that chapter? And then the same thing goes with the wise part of you. How would she write it? So I think that is an interesting exercise to tap into different parts of, I guess, who we are at soul level and our intuition.
Mm. Lovely. That's great. Thank you. And you mentioned a couple of times already about finding our voice, and I think this is going to tap into a few things that you've said already, but I'd like to just pick it up again now and just invite you to say a little bit more about not just finding our voice as writers, but also then sharing that with our audience and our tribe, if you like, because we need to, if we want to be authors and share our work with the world, we need to go to those inner depths of creativity that we've been talking about and find that authentic voice and then take that out to the world and share it with people and find our audience. And I wondered if you had anything more that you could say about finding our audience in an authentic way and sharing our authentic voice with our audience. Mm.
So like about finding our authentic voice, do you mean?
Well, both really, finding our authentic voice in the first place and then finding the place of authenticity within us that is going to resonate with the audience that we want to reach, if you see what I mean.
Yeah. Well, I think that more often than not, it's our courage and our, I call it also our weirdness, us embracing really, truly, deeply who we actually are, the parts of us that we may have been hiding from the world, like our too muchness. So, you know, it might be our sensitivity, we may be highly opinionated, or the parts of us that we have, that don't really fit into society. And maybe at childhood we kind of contained and boxed in a little bit. But I find in actually setting that part of us free, because often that part of us that's been contained over time is actually our authenticity. It's actually who we really, truly, truly are. And when we set that part of us free and we're able to embody that and voice that part of us, that truth in us, which is different and unique, then the people who are our people can find us. I remember looking at different authors that I still admire and deeply admired when I was younger and just being like, oh my gosh, they are just amazing. And when I look at all of the people I admire, I realize that the reason I admire them and I admire their voice and I admire their writing is because they are expressing what is also in me and is wanting to rise in me. And so I find that more often than not, actually us being courageous enough to say the thing that we're afraid to say or show people or let ourselves be seen in a particular light. Actually, that courageous act is the very thing that draws our people, our audience, our tribe in towards us.
Yes. Lovely. Thank you very much. Okay, Rebecca, we are heading almost to the end of our time together. So I would love to ask you to share how people can follow up with you and anything that you'd like to point out. Obviously, you've got your new book coming and your online course. Tell us a little bit about those ways that people can follow up with you and your work.
Yeah, absolutely. So my book, as you've mentioned, is called Rise, Sister, Rise. It's my second book, and it's a guide to unleashing the wild, wise woman within. That's available. It's available for pre-order now. And if you go to risesisterrise.com, there's heaps of prizes and a free meditation and Spotify playlist, lots and lots of goodies. And you can see the trailer there as well. That's officially out on October 7th, and on October 7th I'm going to be launching a membership, monthly membership called the Rise Sister Rise Sisterhood, where we'll be gathering in virtual circle each month, and everyone will be sent a ritual and a meditation and a worksheet each month, which is really just a ritual and a practice of us coming together and listening to what's rising in us and what's falling away, and really tuning in and working that muscle of the wisdom and the intuition, which is our birthright, really.
Fantastic. That's great. So any final tips or words of advice that you would like to share before we finish, Rebecca?
Yeah, I just want to encourage people to be as courageous as they possibly can. And if there is a book or a project that feels like it's rising in you, but you feel like it's a bit out of your depth, invite it in and be open to the writing process actually changing you as a person.
Yes. Lovely. Okay, well, thank you very much, Rebecca. It's been a real pleasure speaking with you and to discover such a lot of common ground in our creative and writing process. That's always lovely to hear. And thank you so much for all that you've shared with us today and all the tips and practical advice you've given. It's been great.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for inviting me to have this chat.
Lovely. Thank you. Okay, so that is all we have time for. So thanks again to my special guest speaker, Rebecca Campbell, who you can find at rebeccacampbell.me, and also her website for her new book, risesisterrise.com. And thanks to all of you for joining us here on the call. We hope very much that you've enjoyed our conversation today. And as always, I'm going to encourage you to take at least one thing that you've heard in this conversation and go ahead and apply it in your creative life and in your writing life right away. So at least one thing, take it forwards and take some action on it. And we will look forward to catching up with you again next month when our guest speaker will be another Hay House author, Sandy Newbeginning, who will be speaking to us about Calm, the foundation of creative freedom for conscious writers. So wherever you are in the world, I wish you a very good rest of day or evening, and we'll catch up with you next month. Bye-bye for now.